if I'm contingent working on your role and I know that there's absolutely, you know, like a, what, 15 to 20% chance that I'm filling this position, I'm going to type in where your practice is and look up every other practice within that region that I could send that candidate to. If you're so confident that you're going to have the best offer with the most money and the best benefits and the best culture and the best room for growth and the best leader that's going to attract them in and you can sell the position, then that works great for you. But if you're not 100% confident that you're going to beat out your other competitors, then it might not be the best option, because then it's the best recruiter wins and it's also the best offer wins.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And today we have a special episode, which is being recorded in person in Atlanta, Georgia. And my very special guest today is Maddie Loomis. Maddie's the founder of Advanced Scope, and they specialize in healthcare recruiting, specifically within orthopedics and sports medicine. Maddie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. I've been wanting to do this for so long. We've known each other for a couple of years now, I think. And it's so amazing to actually meet in person.
I know. It's a far off concept when I first found you and started coaching through you and you're in the UK to ever think we'd be doing this in Atlanta, Georgia.
How did you find me anyway?
That's a good question. I want to say that I put a PSA out on LinkedIn or somewhere and people had recommended you as the coach that they had worked with. And at the time, I think my main focus was trying to learn retained recruitment. So I think it was after I'd been in business for about 6 months and decided I was done with the contingent and I wanted to find someone that could coach me on how to kind of pivot there.
All right. Let's definitely circle back to that topic because that's one of my favorite ones. Yeah. So take me back. How did you first get into recruiting?
Like most, I didn't grow up thinking, hey, I want to be a recruiter. I had been kind of in the world of HR and recruiting was a piece of it for a bit. So I started out my career actually recruiting for donations at my college and found out, hey, I've got a knack for asking people for money over the phone that I don't know. And my mom's like, you should really, you know, grow upon that skill set. And so I started working in recruiting for a healthcare nonprofit community center. And it was just within my state. I'm from Rhode Island, so very small. And I loved it. It was great because I started to learn about recruiting, not just for the money, but people understanding their motivations, understanding the purpose behind what they're doing. And I think that gave me a really strong start into it because I wasn't just learning like your traditional staffing way of recruiting. And then just kept going with it. I had dabbled, kind of gone back and forth between staffing and corporate recruiting. And then ultimately I was in corporate recruiting and said, man, if I took the amount of placements that I made this year and converted it to that of even a 15% fee, like I'd be so rich. And I said, you know, the tech market right now, I switched into tech. Tech market right now is down. Layoffs were happening. And I thought tomorrow I could lose my job. Why am I not just giving myself the stability on my own? And so I did it. I jumped, quit my job and started Advanced Scope.
Amazing. What year was this?
2022.
Okay. So yeah. Wow. You're still like a baby in terms of it's two years.
Yep.
That's brilliant. And still here and doing better than ever.
Yeah.
Through lots of ups and downs, which yes. we'll get into.
Yes.
Awesome. So how did you choose healthcare and sports medicine and orthopedics?
So kind of twofold. Number one, I was working in cybersecurity recruitment in Atlanta with a startup and I had a non-compete. So I had been in tech for about 7 years of recruitment. And that was kind of my world. And I thought, how could I ever do anything but this? You know, my whole pipeline of candidates and network was within this realm. But I'd always kind of wanted to go back to healthcare. My undergraduate degree is in health sciences. I initially wanted to become a speech language pathologist. That didn't happen because I found recruiting. But I figured, you know what? I want to move back into healthcare. It's stable. There's definitely not layoffs going on as far as in companies, hospitals, they're in a shortage of physicians and APPs. So my brother's an orthopedic PA, and he helped me a lot at the beginning of the business to kind of just better understand things and how it operated within that realm. And then I really just grew to find that orthopedics and sports medicine had the greatest demand for the types of clients that I wanted to partner with.
So this is really interesting. Side note, what is an APP?
Advanced Practice Provider. So okay. Physician assistant or nurse practitioner.
Got it. Thank you for that. So did you know early on that you wanted to niche down, or like, how did you come to that decision rather than just kind of recruit across a range of healthcare positions?
Yeah, I think I did a lot of research because I found that post-COVID and during COVID, there was an abundance of nurse and staff type of locums and travel roles that people were doing as far as agencies. And I figured, you know, I'm not going to go out in the market and just be another one that they have to choose from, because there wasn't a lot of differentiation as to who I would be and how I would represent Advanced Scope. So I thought, well, Advanced Scope, Advanced Practice, we actually just started out recruiting PAs and NPs. And that way you can build up a candidate base that was, you know, focused on what we were doing, and then even further niching down to orthopedics and sports medicine. I wanted to know every single orthopedic PA and NP across the nation. And then that way, when I got a client, it's not a matter of me starting a search, but just reaching out to those folks.
Yes, that is absolutely our philosophy as well. And mm-hmm. and so I'm right there with you. And so talk to me about that first year then. What were the highs? What were the lows?
So many hills and valleys. And anybody starting a firm, I think, can relate to that, because you don't know what you don't know. And so I think number one, finding a coach, you know, the time that we spend together, even though it was cut short because of financial stuff that was going on, and we can talk about that, but it is so vital in understanding and just reassuring that what you're doing is the right thing, and learning tactics and finding people that are also in the same spot as you, I think, because it can get lonely when you're doing it solo and you don't have a team yet and you're just starting out and you kind of have that self-doubt and that imposter syndrome. And so the first year was, I mean, it was great. We were profitable, right? So
that's an achievement right there.
Yes.
Like, you know, still being in business and being profitable in your first year.
Yeah. And things really took off, I think, when I made some strategic and difficult decisions about how the team was going to function, who I was going to bring on board, and then also how we were going to partner with people. I think when you start off, you're thinking, okay, anybody that wants to work with me, let's go, right? You're just happy to get a signed contract. And then you step back and you realize that's not always the best business. And you have to be very tactful, but also stand true to what you've said is your standard. And that's where I think doing the retained versus the contingent was a game changer.
Okay, amazing. More on that shortly. Yeah. You mentioned a team though, like, at what stage, I think it started out just Maddie Loomis, right? So what stage did you start building a team, and what does that look like?
So I started the business in the fall of 2022. So during that time frame, it was just me kind of getting frameworks up, finding my ATS, all that, building out process, sending out the videos to people saying, hey, here's what we do. Do you want to work with me? And eventually I hired a VA. And she was with me for, I want to say, maybe 6 to 8 months, and then ended up getting another opportunity somewhere, making more money, which I understand that happens. And that really helped because it helped me on the sourcing front, so that when I was needing to deliver, I had that part of things handled and I could have lead lists ready to go for that next morning. And they were in the Philippines, so the timing worked out perfect. And that was something, too, that I believe you are the one who paved that way for me to say, hey, you can get this help, right? Because I was not in a position to hire somebody for a true base salary at that point.
Love that. Well said. And by the way, congrats on your recent marriage. I saw your wedding photos and stuff.
Yeah, exciting. We eloped under a tree and then ate waffles on the porch. So it was perfect. It cost us about $25.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that. Yeah. That's brilliant. So now 2 years in, what do you think is the, like, what's one of the achievements you feel most proud about?
So I think the greatest thing that I'm proud of is that I am 100% bootstrapped. So, you know, when you start a business, and especially when you've been in the recruiting game for a bit, you do already have a brand around yourself, but not your business. So then when you do go out and do that, there are people that naturally know your work ethic, know your hustle, and they're like, hey, if you ever need help, you just give me a call. And I was very thankful for those people that they were willing to say, hey, I'll give you whatever you need to hire that first employee or to, you know, buy that expensive software. But I really wanted to have the pride that I did it myself. And I was raised by two school teachers who did not come from wealth and who did it themselves. And now they have two homes. One is a vacation home and, you know, they're not rich, but they've built a life that they didn't depend on anybody else but themselves and their hard work. And so for me, I wanted to do that. I didn't want to take the easy route and just accept someone else's money, because then I knew that meant that then they have a say.
Exactly. Yeah.
And even if they say they don't want a say, at the end of the day, it didn't feel right to me to even accept somebody's money for something and then not give them that opportunity. And not that I'm controlling, but I knew, like, hey, again, like, I left my job to do it the way that I see fit. So I'm going to do that, even if it's a slower build. So I did it. And, you know, to this day, I haven't accepted a penny from anybody else.
Let's talk about that slow build idea, because I think it's so important for people to realize this is a marathon, not a sprint, right? And, you know, if you think of the long-term vision, and you know, are relentless and resourceful and you keep working at it, you will get there. But what's your philosophy in terms of, like, building slow versus fast?
So I think it's hard because you do have the comparison factor. You go on LinkedIn and you see other companies that started at the same time as you, and now they're hiring their fifth employee, and you're like, oh, I just hired one. So, like, what am I doing wrong, right? Like, am I doing it right? Are they doing it right? But you also have to understand that everybody has a different outcome that they're looking for. Some people want to scale quick and exit. Some people are doing pure staffing, and so their plan is to do that so that they can get to that exit plan quicker. For me, it was more so building a lifestyle business. I'm not somebody that needs to be rich. I just want to be comfortable. Now, don't get me wrong, like, I want to make good money, but I don't need a Lamborghini to drive. I live in a farm. I don't need a Lamborghini to drive on my farm. You know, I don't need to wear Gucci and Prada. It doesn't, you know, relate to me. So I think it was, you know, knowing that, hey, I'm not growing as fast, but hopefully the growth that I'm creating is going to sustain.
Right. Absolutely. Sustainable growth is key. So I agree 100% with that. And it's so important to know, what do I really want, and build a roadmap for how you can get there, and not to, they say comparison is the thief of joy, right? And it's so hard not to, especially on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and you're seeing, and of course, everyone, it's human nature. We put our best selves out there online, but then that's what you're seeing. You're not seeing the dark days, the tough times, the stuff that is, you're not actually seeing their balance sheet or their profit and loss either, right?
Yeah,
you're seeing
overhead.
A curated impression of, oh, we've hired our fifth employee. Okay, well, that's impressive, no doubt. But are you making a profit? And, you know, there's layers to that.
And I think there's some people that they might hire more and then they just take more of the risk up front, knowing that if these people produce, eventually I'm going to see my ROI, which is another way of doing it. Yeah. Because I was bootstrapped, I didn't have that money outlay to say, let me go hire 10 people. And then, you know, within 6 months, as long as they're producing, we're good. Like, that money, I'm working off of my life savings here, you know, like, so it's just different. And so I think knowing that that doesn't make you worse or farther behind, it's just a different approach.
I love that. You're not behind.
No.
You're on your own path. And, you know, that's what you need to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
You did something else, though, which was pretty impressive, which is you doubled your income from year one to year two. So can you talk a little bit about, I think everyone would want to know, how did you do that?
Yeah. Sure. So number one, I think the main thing that I can attribute to is retain search. Contingent, in my mind, is great when you're first starting. You can build some street cred and get your name and brand out there. But it's very easy for anybody to go out and say, hey, I'm going to give you this free service, and unless I'm successful, you don't have to pay me, because you have less of a tie to it. So then if it gets difficult, you can just walk away. And not only that, any smart recruiter is going to make sure that they're sending it to 10 different places, or I say it, can the candidate, to 10 different practices to see who wants them.
Of course.
Because it's greater
shots
at goal.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're going to take that approach, then fine. But I saw the biggest change, not even, and I would say the numbers come second, in just the quality of client relationships and the enjoyment in what I was doing.
That is huge, Maddie. Could you say more about that?
Yes. So I found that when I was going out getting these contingent contracts, you could close a contract in 2 days. You could meet with them, send them a LinkedIn message, meet with them on Zoom, get a contract over, get it signed, and they don't think twice about it. Now, when you start asking people, hey, listen, we work in retained partnership and here's why, you know, boom, boom, boom. They want to trust you first. They want to like you. They want to trust you, and they want that before they do business with you. And so it's a slower roll, again, a slower build to a longer term partnership. And so it takes more vetting. It takes more figuring out, are we the right fit? Can I fill the role? Because you don't want to take their money if you can't. That's the other thing is like, you can't just say, well, retained, give me a retainer, and then I'm not even going to work on your position or try. And so you're also more careful about who am I working with? Because can I actually win for them? And it's not just about the candidate, but the values, the culture, the turnover, everything else that comes with it.
That is beautiful. I love that. So you mentioned, first of all, backing up a second, what was it that tipped you over the edge and made you think, I need to change my business model and focus on retained?
So I had a client who I was working very hard for, and they had given us like, I think 10 different positions or something like that. And we were contingent. And I remember him saying they were working with other firms, which in my mind, I kind of like that competition. I don't even mind if there's other firms if we're retained, as long as I know you're dedicated to actually hearing me out and viewing my candidates. But I remember like staying up until midnight sometimes because they were in California and I'm on EST. And so when they could talk, it was my nighttime. So I remember one night, multiple nights, staying up just consistently late, taking these calls, typing up these page long paragraphs of like, what are they motivated by? Why are they leaving? Like just going above and beyond for these folks, sending them these candidates, getting them interviews. And then they just decided they like weren't going to hire for them anymore. And that they found all these people internally. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just spent 3 months like sending over handfuls of candidates and all this time for nothing. And then,
it's heartbreaking, isn't it?
And you feel like defeated because you're like, I knew they were good candidates. Like they were excellent candidates. And then you feel bad because it's not just about the client. You got to go back to the candidate and say, hey, never mind. Like now you look silly because you don't have that relationship with your client to where they're even keeping you updated. And so I just felt like, you know what? I'm not like, they've got to have some skin in the game. It's not even about the money. It's about them showing me that they're actually in this with me.
Well said. That is brilliant. So you said a few minutes ago, you were like, okay, we work in a retained partnership and here's why, boom, boom, boom. Could you tell me the boom, boom, boom part?
Yeah. So I have a few of them that I got from your coaching, but my go-to is kind of just saying like, okay, you know, I try to get them to almost answer their own question and saying, you've worked with other recruiters. What has been your experience? And 9 times out of 10, it's bad. We haven't gotten any candidates. The candidates were crappy. Okay, fair enough. What type of partnership were you in with them? Well, we used 4 different firms and we were all contingent. And I'm like, okay, can I tell you why you didn't get results? And they're like, sure. And I'll say, if I'm contingent working on your role, and I know that there's absolutely, you know, like a, 15 to 20% chance that I'm filling this position, I'm going to type in where your practice is and look up every other practice within that region that I could send that candidate to. And if you're so confident that you're going to have the best offer with the most money and the best benefits and the best culture and the best room for growth and the best leader that's going to attract them in and you can sell the position, then that works great for you. But if you're not 100% confident that you're going to beat out your other competitors, then it might not be the best option, because then it's the best recruiter wins, and it's also the best offer wins. And then also saying, okay, you know, reminding them it's not about me getting the couple thousand dollars up front. I mean, as recruiters, we make good money. A couple thousand dollars is, you know, not going to make or break our business. And so it's saying, I'm not asking you for this money because I want it and then to run away. I want you to show me that you're in this with me and that you actually want me to win. And I've turned down business that was retained when I thought they didn't want me to win. Even though they were willing to give me money up front, I felt like it was kind of a fabrication to then I was going to have to like sit there and still prove myself daily to the HR manager and be in that battle. And so I think it's also feeling out like retained doesn't always mean too that they're the best client for you.
I love that, Maddie. And that was so well said, how you want to make sure that they're in it with you. Yes. And that they want you to win. That's,
yeah,
that's cool. Yeah. So the other element is, so your first two points were very well made, which is that number one, if you're using multiple firms, you're competing with your own recruiter, yeah, right? Because you have made zero commitment to them. Mm-hmm. In order for them to win, they have to shop that very placeable candidate out to multiple employers to maximize their chance of getting paid. That's only just, that's logical, right? Yeah. Number two, your second point was that, sorry, Maddie, what was your second point?
In that, you know, the retainer isn't about them. A lot of people think, oh, you want money up front just to get money.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And it's so, like, I really don't want your money for that reason. You know, like, I'm not taking this and going to the mall.
Exactly. So you said it. And then third, I would say that if you've given this job to four recruiters and you think they're all going out and breaking their back to try and fill this for you, that's not happening, because they all know that they've got a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 chance of actually getting paid for their work. So you are deprioritized, right?
Yeah, because you're the bottom of the list.
They, you know, can't, they commercially, it does not make sense for them to, you know, allocate their top priority time, resources, and team on your search when there's such a low probability of success. That wouldn't make sense. So you are an afterthought. The reality is they're working on other searches, and as they find candidates for those clients who are invested, who are partnering with them, who do value and respect their time, and then if they uncover candidates that aren't a perfect match for that client, they're sending them to you. That's really what's happening, right?
Well, and also telling them, because sometimes people are like, you know, we will be deprioritized. We don't need it immediately. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to send these folks, though, to my retained clients first. And then if they don't want them, they'll be your leftovers. And nobody wants to be a leftover. But that's the reality of how it works. I mean, even in staffing, we ranked them A rec, B rec, C rec. And it was based on, are you the only recruiter? Do you have more than one position? Is the job description, the salary, the benefits strong? And also, like, are they paying something up front for us to actually allocate resources? Because it costs us money to do the search, costs us manpower behind the search, and that's why you're hiring us. And it's far more cheap, or, you know, less expensive for us to do it than for them to most of the time. Because I'm like, hey, what's your salary?
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you break that down to an hourly rate and you just told me you're interviewing 20 candidates from Indeed and all of them are crappy, I mean, you just wasted how much of your hourly pay when you could be focused on higher acuity things.
Well said. Absolutely. So, love that, Maddie. So you made this shift from contingent to retained. Are you all retained now, or is it a mixture?
So we do contingent on the basis that if we have a candidate in play, the retainer comes to us. So let's say we have a new relationship with somebody. They don't know who we are. We don't know who they are. And that's what recruiters have to remember, I think, too, is you're still trying to feel them out. And no, not every client is a good client, even if they are retained. So you could get into a relationship with somebody and send them a candidate and it takes them 72 hours to get back. And you could go, hey, listen, man, that's not going to cut it. Like, these candidates are hot on the market. I need to know within at least a day's time frame. Mm-hmm. And if they can't do that, and then the candidate interviews and they're like, hey, he was late for the interview. He was in a t-shirt that like had Red Hot Chili Peppers on it. And you're like, really? Like for a physician role, you're going to show up like that? So I think it also gets to a point where you have to think, okay, let's do contingent for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And if we are both happy at the end of that, then we change into a retained model. But it gives you an out as a recruiter. If you think, hey, I don't want to tie my dedication to this because they're clearly not a good partner.
That's interesting. That's a good
approach. Kind of like dating, you know, like you go on those first few dates, feel them out. And then if you're like, you know, okay. I don't think this is for me. You don't feel like, okay, we're boyfriend and girlfriend. Now I have to cause this major heartbreak, you know?
That's a good way of looking at it. Alternatively, you could just give them the deposit back.
Yeah,
right?
You could.
If you felt after 3 weeks, you're like, this isn't working for me. I don't want to be tied to this client anymore.
Right.
But I can't in good conscience keep the money. I'm just going to refund it and move on.
You definitely could. I think I find that most people are more likely to do the contingent for 2 weeks and then retainer because they still don't want to come out of their pocket just yet.
Okay.
Right. So it kind of gives them that waiting period to see, like, is she worth what she says she's worth?
How does that work from a contractual point of view? Is it more of like an honor system? Like, you know,
it's in writing.
Okay. So tell me how that works then.
So in the contract, you would just put something along the lines of, you know, this is a contingent contract until X amount of date.
Yeah.
And or upon the engagement of a candidate. And at that point is when this contract now moves into a retainer. And X amount will be due to continue our search. Otherwise, the search will be put on hold.
When you say engagement of a candidate, do you mean an interview?
Right. So you submit a candidate and you would blind submit them, right?
Okay.
And then that way they can say yay or nay. And then at that point, then your contract moves from that to a retainer. And then that would be due.
Ah, that's clever. I like that. That's new. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And we find it to work because it gives everybody the fair chance. And you can be very honest about it. Like, look, I want an out. Because I don't know you just as much as you don't know me. So I want to make sure that my time is well spent because I have great clients and I've got great candidates. And I want to make sure that we're keeping that standard. And so it's, again, not making yourself an order taker, but a partner and saying there is a standard and I want to test and feel you out too. And then you're on an equal playing field rather than just being another recruiter or vendor.
I love the posture and the positioning of that, of, you know, this has to be
mutual.
Work for both of us. It's a mutually committed process. And that's brilliant. I love that. So how did that play out then? Because, you know, you're going out there and you're trying something different. And, you know, did it work straight out of the gate? Or how did that play out?
So I would recommend everybody to do your retained recruitment coaching because I think that was key. And even when I brought on Stacy to the team, she also went through that same program because she was coming from a place of contingent staffing. And same thing, like she was just tired of the losses, tired of feeling like just another vendor and not being taken seriously. And so I think that, number one, and just understanding your value, your proposition, your pitch, and how you're going to partner. But, you know, I think also knowing that you also have to have your wits about you in that, again, a retained partner is not always still a good partner.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. But then, so thank you for the plug, by the way.
Yes.
I appreciate that. And so you go out there and you start presenting this idea to clients. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction?
I think people take to it more than just the straight contingent and the straight retainer.
Okay.
If you explain why. If you just go out and pitch a retainer and you say, well, that's just how we operate, and you don't explain the benefits to them or like the reality of the opposite. If you say, you know, we're contingent recruiters, and you don't explain to them, this is how we're going to work on your position, then there's a gap. There's a gray area where they're guessing to what you're working on, when you're working on it, how often you're working on it. Whereas when you do a retainer, I can outline, this is the amount of time dedicated each week. Here's, you know, who's going to be working on it on the team. Here's the resources that we're going to be using. And here's the outcome. right? And then here's the things that we use to measure that that was successful. And so I think when you outline that to them and show them, here's why the contingent recruiters didn't work in the past, or here's why we don't recommend that. And sometimes I do. If it's a medical assistant that I can fill in 2 days, I'll do contingent. That's fine, you know? But if it's a physician search that might take me 3 months, or a PA search that's in the middle of nowhere and we've got to use different resources and networks, then yeah, I'm going to need your skin in the game.
Love that. That's fantastic. So that was obviously a key shift. Was there anything else that contributed to you doubling your income in that between year one and year two?
Yeah. So I think I hired my first like full-time team member. Woo-hoo! Yeah. Stacy, she's fantastic.
Shout out to Stacy.
Yeah. She is great. And we live in the same town. And I think I had made, not hiring mistakes, but just had hired folks that I think didn't really have that drive.
Mm.
And they're great people, but it just wasn't what I needed to propel the business forward and to have someone that was on the same, you know, mindset as me.
Yes.
And I mean, Stacy is just that. We share the same values. We have the same grit and work ethic and hustle. And so bringing her onto the team and being in lockstep with someone, I think is key, because you could bring on someone too that is also a hustler but doesn't do business the same way or doesn't see it the same way, and it can be a disaster. But that has helped obviously as well, just because the more people you have billing, the more your revenue is.
So this is, you said a few things there that I really liked. One is finding people that have the drive, right?
Yeah.
They might be good people, but it takes a certain kind of person to do well at this and drive. You can train skills.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them, you know, training on how to sell retainers and all that, but you can't give someone drive,
no.
Right? That has to come from
that.
Inside them. So how did you find Stacy?
So I recruited her. I did a LinkedIn search in my area. I knew I wanted somebody local because I was also wanting that in-person element. And I actually just hired our third full-time employee, which I won't announce
Maddie.
Who they are just yet.
Okay.
But they're also in Georgia in the Atlanta area. And, you know, we met at a coffee shop and we co-worked. I was like, hey, look, I don't know if I'm ready to hire someone, but she was kind of feeling burnout from where she was at. She wanted to make a move into something a little bit more like entrepreneurial, if you will. And we just worked together for a couple of weeks. And through that, they're talking. And we would give each other feedback on like, hey, we're trying to fill this position. What would you recommend I do? And I just realized that our dynamic worked really well. And we're kind of like good cop, bad cop.
What do you mean?
She's a bad cop. I'm a good cop. She's very just like blunt and to the point. And I tend to be more of a people pleaser. And so it works well in both scenarios where she wants to just like bulldog it. And I'm like, hey, wait a second. Like, let's put some, you know, thought to this first before we just say something to a client or candidate. And then vice versa. If I'm being too kind about a situation, she's like, no, that's bull crap. Like, you know, so it's good. And I think that's also a key point is hire people that are different than you, who bring a different skill set, because
same values,
but
different skills, different personalities.
Yes. Yep. And she's just been great. So I'm happy that I found her.
So I'm interested in your approach of you didn't hire her right away, but you co-worked together. Mm-hmm. Never heard of that before.
Yeah.
So she was still working for her other employer.
Yeah.
But she was interested in potentially joining you.
Mm-hmm.
And you, so how did you, like, how did that come about? Like, what was the conversation to decide, hey, let's try this for a while, just seeing how we work together, but you're going to be working your job, I'm going to be working my business. How did that work out?
So initially, I kind of just had a frank conversation with her like, hey, look, I'm hopefully adding to my team soon. I don't know that like I'm doing it tomorrow, but I'm also looking for people in this area to co-work with because I was feeling a bit lonely and trapped up in the house, just being on the computer all day long. And then my husband would come home and I'd, you know, just, you know, my client this, my candidate that. And so I said, I really need to get out more and find some people that are doing the same thing as I am. And in doing that, she was like, that's fine. I'm looking for the same thing. So we just clicked and started chatting and co-working. And then little by little, we just kind of had an open conversation about what pay would look like and what the structure would be like. We agreed upon it and she started.
That is so cool. I've never heard of that before, Maddie. That's another, what a great way to decide, because it's a little bit like, you know, they always say, don't marry someone until you've lived with them for a while, right? Because you never know. And so it's a bit like you get to move in together before you tie the knot. So
that's exactly
a great
and
idea.
And I did it with this third hire too. I've known him for probably about a year-ish that we've been connected on LinkedIn. And we've had conversations and we've just kept that network open. And they had expressed interest. And at the time, it didn't work out. And then second time around, you just build up that trust so that you're not just hiring somebody that you don't know or don't have any background on.
That is so interesting. And it fits with, we're coming full circle to you talking about like building slow, right? And so that's awesome, Maddie. So shift to retain, starting to build a really solid team. Mm-hmm. Any other key factors that have helped you to really start hitting your stride and seeing those financial results?
Learn to let go of control.
Mm, say more about that.
Yeah. So I think when you start a business, it's your baby and you want to be able to have control over things, not from a sense of like, I think people think of control as being this negative thing all the time. And I think it comes from a place of passion a lot of the times. And
you care. You really want,
you want to deliver the best and you want things to be like that white glove, red carpet experience. And so you have this standard again and you're like, you know, can somebody else meet that same criteria? They can. And I think you just have to remind yourself that like, if you can do it, somebody else can. And you just have to equip them with the right resources and then let them do it. Without micromanaging, without controlling the situation, because as a business owner, that's how you're eventually going to work on your business and not in it. And I think that's most people's goal. I know it's mine.
So you shared a belief system there, which was, if I can do this, then I should be able to teach somebody else to do it as well. Yeah. Which is a different belief system to somebody who is scared to let go because their belief system is nobody can do this as good as me, right? That's often the case. Or clients only want to deal with me. Mm-hmm. Or by the time I teach someone else to do this, I may as well just do it myself. We have these limiting beliefs that hold back our progress. So have you always thought that way? Or how did you get to the point where you embraced the idea of finding good people with the right values, the right work ethic, and then letting them do their thing?
I think I was just burnt out. I mean, it got to the point of just having that kind of breaking point where you're like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing by myself, staying at the same level as far as like revenue, and also being able to be all the other things in life that I want to be. Because I love my job. I love what I do. I love owning a business and the freedom, but I also love being a wife and being an aunt and being a daughter, being a friend and working out. And I like those things, you know, and I want to be able to play the piano and I don't want to have to feel like I can't do the things that I enjoy because I'm in front of the computer for 90 hours a week. And it got to the point where it was like, okay, either I'm going to again burn out and this is going to be short-lived, or I'm going to get the right people on the bus and give them the trust to do the things that, you know, I'm no rocket scientist. If I can figure it out, they can too.
It comes back to this concept. Everyone talks about scale, but not enough people talk about building a sustainable business. Right. A scalable business is great. That's fantastic. But sustainable is equally, if not more, important. Were you literally doing 90 hours, Maddie?
Yeah. Oh, I would wake up at 6 o'clock and I would get a quick workout in and I would work until, I mean, we'd be sitting there at midnight and I would have to put the light on my computer down in bed because my husband was trying to sleep and I was sitting on my laptop in bed working.
That's,
and he was like,
I'm laughing,
you need
but
to shut it down.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I'm sure many people listening can absolutely relate to that. So if someone recognizes themselves in what you just said, like I'm working way too much, this is unsustainable. Look, when you run a business, you have to work hard. There's no way around that. But in the long term, it's not sustainable, and you will burn out, and to the detriment of your business, right? And yeah. And so how did you, obviously hiring good people was one of those keys to being able to create that time again and reclaim some of your time and your sanity. What were some of the other keys to going from 90 hours a week to what's a typical week now?
I would say 50.
Okay. So 90 to 50, that's a full hour. That's like 40 hours. That's a full work week, right?
I think it was just, I think when you are working that much, you are so in the eye of the storm of it all. And you lose all sense of creativity. You lose sense of ideas because you're just like on a conveyor belt. That's one of your terms, but you know, you're just, you know, cranking every single day, and you lose sense of like, hey, you know, like I consider myself a creative person. When do I have my ideas? When I'm walking outside. Well, if I asked myself when the last time I'd gone for a walk during that time frame, couldn't have told you, you know, and I was going to the gym at 8:30 at night and coming home and eating dinner at 10, you know, which isn't healthy. And it's just, I got to the point where I said, okay, if I don't change this, I'm not going to be able to do this. And again, like just the knowing I wanted to build a lifestyle business, knowing that I didn't want to go back to corporate America was my drive to say, okay, I need to cut back, and that it's okay to not be productive. Sometimes not being productive is actually productive.
Right. Because that's when the creativity,
yes,
you know, kicks in. And that's the fun part of being an entrepreneur, right? Yeah. It's having the ideas and being, you can't think of the strategies to grow your business when you're just on that hamster wheel. So was there a moment or a kind of, or an experience when it just kind of, you're like, that's it, I need to change?
Yeah, I think it was kind of like right before I had hired Stacy, and I knew too, like that I wanted to eventually have a family, and I knew that it was not sustainable for that. And I just thought, you know, like we were getting married and I was going on a honeymoon. And I remember thinking, I don't know, we're going to have to postpone the honeymoon till I can actually go and not be on my laptop. And even when we went, like the whole way down there, I was working. The whole way back, I was working. And Stacy had to tell me, like, if you get on Slack, like I'm going to find a way to cut you off. Like, I do not want to hear your Slack ping go off.
Right, right.
Even like on my wedding day, I was sending her something and she was like, you've got to be kidding me. She was like, get off Slack right now. And there wasn't like an aha moment. It was just kind of like a slow burn. And again, I just think you need to find your people and then trust them to do what they do. And then allow yourself to take time to reset, because most CEOs, or the way I see it, they should be the visionaries, not always the executors. Because without the visionary, you can't build. Everything's just going to remain flat. And the ideas and your differentiation and the value add is always going to just be flatlined.
Really well said. So let's talk about your podcast then.
Sure.
Healthy Careers, it's called. Perfect name for what you do.
Yep.
Why did you start that, and how's it been going?
It's been great. It's been our like number one, you know, latchkey, if you will. It has generated tons of business, and I don't know why I didn't do it sooner, to be honest. I think I was just so busy that first year that I was like, I'll get to it. And then of course, once I got it set up, now we're recording 3 to 4 podcasts a week.
Wow.
I've got Stacy also recording. So I've, you know, kind of, again, let go of that control and let her have the platform as well, so that she can have on potential clients and people on her podcast and what she does. And it's been great because we talk to all the people. We get a heartbeat on the market. We can talk better with folks and give them insight to things that I wouldn't have otherwise, even outside of if they become a partner, you know, or a client or not.
That is amazing. And in quite a short time. When did you launch the podcast?
January. And we're at like 30 something episodes.
Go Maddie. That is awesome.
Yeah. I'm loving it. And it's a nice break from the day-to-day of recruiting.
Yeah.
Because I love talking to people. That's why I like recruiting. So it's been, I would recommend it for sure.
I need to level up my game. We're 3 or 4 episodes a week you're recording?
Yeah, but we're only posting 1 a week. But like right now, like we've got enough.
But you must be banking
fill.
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are. Which is great, you know, because, and, you know, we take the podcast and then I send out, you know, a Yeti cup with our logo on it to them after and a gift card and a personalized note. And so just doing things too that remind them like, hey, we're in your corner without saying, can we work on your business? Can we work on your open roles?
Right.
So I just hate that type of ask.
Yeah. So interesting. Can you share a little more about how the podcast converts into business?
Yeah. Again, it's not immediate. Sometimes we'll have someone on the podcast and 6 months later, they're like, hey, we have a need. Can you help? And then sometimes I had a podcast guest who asked me to hire for something that's really not my specialty. And I said, I'd love to help, but I don't think that I'm the best person for this. And so then again, you're building trust because you're not just being a yes man. You're not just trying to get business. You're trying to add value. And so, but yeah, then sometimes we have a client that comes, or, you know, a podcast guest that comes on, and then the next week they're a client because they're like, oh, I didn't realize you did recruiting. We actually have to hire. Can you help? So it's, you know, it's varied, but the engagement and then the high touch follow up, I think, is what helps to ultimately.
I'm taking notes here, Maddie. Can you say a little more about, so you have the follow up, you send them, what are you sending them?
So after they're on the podcast, I get like Yeti cups because nobody's going to throw away a Yeti. Everyone knows they're really expensive. So I buy Yeti cups and then I get them engraved with the logo and it says like Healthy Careers podcast member so that they feel, you know, like.
Oh, they're part of like an exclusive.
Yeah. Well,
alumni.
And they are, you know, yeah. Like they're, we don't just get someone off the streets to come on the podcast.
Right.
We're targeting leaders and people that have actually done something to share their story. And then I'm sending, you know, like I got a graphic made of just a little bit more about me and what I like to do in my free time. And it's a picture of me fly fishing in Blue Ridge. And we use Yetis when we go fly fishing. So it's like, hey, I don't know what activities you like, but hopefully this helps. And then I put a little gift card in there so that if they do want to use our services, they have some money off of it from being on the podcast as a monetary way of thanking them for their time as well.
That is smart. Really, really smart, Maddie. I love that. Yeah. So you're only 2 years in. Mm-hmm. What's the vision for the future then?
That's a good question. I think when I think lifestyle business, I want to work more on the business rather than in. So in hiring this third person, hopefully that will allow me to focus on some bigger partnership things. We have great things that we do with Surgeon Masters where they provide coaching on top of once we place somebody and they're, you know, orthopedic surgeons who have been in the business for 20 years and they can work as a mentor for folks that we place.
That's cool.
Yeah. So just different things like that. And building a team that is self-sufficient. I mean, the team, they can earn up to 50% commission on their own accounts. And so giving them also what I think is what recruiters should make if they're doing all the legwork. And building a place where people who maybe they don't want to work in corporate, but they don't want to go work for the, you know, AMNs of the world where they're getting 10% commission and they're doing everything, they can feel like they're almost running their own mini business within the business. And it empowers them to have autonomy, flexibility, and to earn great money.
That is amazing. Well, I am enjoying watching you,
you
as your business grows
yeah.
and thrives, Maddie. I'm super proud of what you've accomplished so far.
Thank you so much.
And can't wait. This was a fun episode. Let's do it again.
Definitely. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Maddie.